Hi, because you're listening to this podcast, you know exactly how powerful a good podcast really is and how important the right guests are. And that guest could be you. The show today is sponsored by speakonpodcasts.com. They're the world's leading podcast booking agency for B2B and tech brands. And they get people like you on podcasts like this. Find out exactly how good they are by going to speakonpodcasts.com/leader. Fill in the form and they'll send you three podcasts that you should be on. Fuel your brand on podcasts. speakonpodcasts.com/leader. Hello and welcome to the Shiny New Object podcast. My name is Tom Ollerton. I'm the founder of Automated Creative, and this is a podcast about the future of marketing. Every week or so, I have the pleasure and the privilege of interviewing one of our industry's leaders. And this week is no different. I'm on a call with Jerry Dakin, who is Senior Media Director at GSK. Jerry, it's your fourth appearance on the podcast, but for those who don't know who you are and what you do, could you give the audience an overview?
I think it's a record-breaking fourth, isn't it? Which is, you know, timely as we come into Olympic Games season. I think this is, you know, this is the Olympic Games of marketing podcasts. So proud to be breaking records here. Yeah, my day job at GSK, I've worked in various different local, global, regional media and digital roles, largely in the kind of consumer goods world. So I used to work at Cadbury at Mondelez. I've worked at Diageo. I've done a bit of time agency side at Kara Dentsu. And these days, yeah, I work at GSK Consumer Healthcare, which is Sensodyne and Panadol and Advil and Voltarol and lots of really great brands that help consumers live slightly better and healthier lives. And I lead our EMEA and now recently our LATAM media teams, helping us spend, over £500 million worth of advertising money and across TV and digital channels with a team that tries to work out how on earth we should spend that and where on earth we should spend that. People may hear from me elsewhere that I'm pretty passionate about diversity, inclusion, some of the change we want to drive in our industry. And I wear a bunch of different hats and rant about that, including on some of our previous podcasts.
So in amongst all of those many hats and that very big and responsible position at GSK, what are the new things, what are the new beliefs, what are the new behaviours that you've found yourself believing or applying in the last year or so based on the experience we've all just been through?
Yeah, I was thinking, because the last time we spoke was naively, and I think in February or so last year, where we were kind of chatting away in the publisher's office with no idea what was coming ahead of us. I think I've been lucky enough to be, you know, fully busy and in work, etc., for the past year. But I think, like many people in that situation, it's been a bit of a roller coaster nonetheless in terms of just how busy, how intense, how working from home, whilst the flexibility and all those things has some great advantages, there's also been just, you know, an awful lot of video calls, an awful lot of sat in front of a desk chatting and talking to people, etc. So I guess some of the probably the key two biggest things is, one, I mean, this has always been a key thing, but something I'm never that good on, around like prioritization, around saying no to some things, or around working out how you can condense things. Like, if, you know, I work a lot with publicists and agency, rather than having lots and lots of different meetings, let's have a weekly catch up and let's put things on that agenda and use that time efficiently. And everyone has really been around kind of balance and mental health and wellness, and just I'm not a massive exerciser or anything like that. So, you know, you won't find me at the gym or anything like that before this, but, you know, just day-to-day life, you are fairly active. And I found that, you know, you have to be much more deliberate on that. So pretty much every day, though we've had some heat recently that's maybe challenged that a little bit, every day I try and pick at least one meeting that I'm going to take walking, so that I get a bit of fresh air, stretch the legs, and just get a bit of exercise. And also, I've become a mad Peloton fan and try and do that most mornings to kind of start my day with a bit of energy. So just trying to be a bit more deliberate about the fact that we don't just move around naturally. So you've got to think about it. And I think that really helps a lot with the focus with the day job and with, surviving in this slightly bonkers world.
And so that's the day-to-day, but coming from a completely different perspective, what or in what way would you like people to remember your career?
I think in the simplest terms, I love people to think about me as someone who came and made marketing better, maybe even the whole marketing industry better. And that's a fairly, you know, it might seem like an outrageous claim, but actually I think every single person listening to this could make the marketing industry better. And I mean that because in a slightly weird way, I'm actually sort of passionate about marketing in itself. And I really believe that I want our discipline to be better, more effective, more analytical in its thinking, but also more diverse, more inclusive, more open-minded, more progressive. I do talk about and challenge a lot of those areas. And I definitely would like to think at the end of the day, people would remember that I drove some change in those spaces, but ultimately, drove great results for businesses and helped them change and adapt in what they were doing.
So I'm kind of a little bit cynical about this. Maybe it's my agency background, but when I sort of came into the industry around sort of 2008, what was really cool was like sort of greenwashing, talking about how green everything was. And I sort of noticed there's always a trend, certainly for agencies, to kind of jump onto the thing that makes them look good. Because let's be honest, there's some elements of advertising and marketing that like they're kind of sort of borderline whether it's ethical or not. You know, certain products, the way that certain things are advertised, that might genuinely aren't healthy for, you know, kids or adults. But my cynical view thinks that agencies in particular can jump onto those things to help them feel better about themselves. And this was reminded kind of starkly the other day when I was taking a brief, and in the brief it said something along the lines of, what's really important to this audience is sustainability. So therefore, you know, we really need to talk about that. It wasn't like, sustainability is like a really important thing and a business should be all over that. It was just like, no, well, that's what the consumer wants. So we will like alter our message to kind of reflect that. And then in another conversation a little while ago, I heard about a client talking about like ramping up the diversity and every now and again, I hear these things where it just makes me feel like, is this actually coming from a place of care, or is it coming from a place of like survival and, you know, saying whatever it takes to win the work? Very cynical view, but where do you land on that?
I mean, there's some really fair challenges in there. I think the answer is I probably land somewhere in the middle. Marketers definitely have a bit of a guilt complex, I think. Some of the sort of the more purposeful marketing that's popular these days sometimes seems to stem from a fact that people aren't willing to say, you know, my day job is to sell stuff, make money, often help a big, giant global corporation become even richer, which, you know, for many of us working marketing, that is ultimately what our day job is. But I absolutely think marketing is something bigger than that as well. Marketing funds a lot of things. It has a lot of impact on society. It can drive a positive change. And just because you're doing something that's commercial and business orientated absolutely doesn't mean you can't do that in a way that, you know, enriches the world around it, makes it a better place. I think it's positive that more agencies, more companies are becoming aware of that. I think you can see many cases where that is really, really driven by a genuine passion of that business, by the passion of the people within it. But yes, you also find cases where it's slightly cynically driven by, you know, consumers wanting this, or, you know, this being the latest trendy thing. But, you know, again, marketing is about being consumer led. So if you identify that consumers care about sustainability, that's not a bad thing. And if that gives you a kick up the backside, that's not a bad thing. But the response probably shouldn't be to brief someone, how can I talk a bit about sustainability, and more wider question of, you know, how am I solving for sustainability in my business? Am I actually doing credible steps that mean I have the right to talk about it? There's a long way to go in some of that stuff. But for the most part, I think even if people end up doing it for the wrong reasons, it's still a good progress to be made. And ultimately, especially on the diversity point, yes, it can be sort of trendy, if you can say that, and of the moment to kind of support certain causes and back certain movements, etc. But ultimately, it's fundamentally our job as marketers to understand our consumers, to communicate effectively to them, and to make them care about us, want about us, think about us. And you can do that better if you understand that your consumers are not all an average homogenous blob. They are unique and diverse, and there are many things that connect us, and there are many things that make people different and have different expectations. And then better understanding you have of that, the better you'll be at a marketer. So you don't need to have some higher purpose in life for inclusion and representation to actually be your job as a marketer. That's a whole different podcast. And in fact, if you listen to the last one we did, we talked quite a lot about that.
So I'm curious to know, before we get onto your shiny new object, do you have a killer marketing top tip that you find yourself bestowing to your team, or something you heard at the start of your career, or something you heard last week?
A good thing I was told once, I can't remember who by, but I repeat it regularly now. As marketers, we spend a lot of time, if we're honest, dealing with politics and internal, bringing people along an internal journey, and how do we persuade our colleagues and our bosses to do things. And we do a great job as marketers of understanding consumers and what their barriers are and what they care about. But I actually don't think we often spend the time thinking about that on our stakeholders. So the simple tip was, if you're, think about the internal sales pitch you're doing the same way you would an external. Think about, what is in it for your boss, for your colleagues, what do they care about? And one of the biggest things is to try and put yourselves in their shoes and some of the reasons they would say no to the great thing you're proposing. And it's often very simple things like, gosh, that sounds like it would take a lot of my time. That's a bit scary because I'm not sure I have enough on my plate already. And if you kind of understand what some of those obvious objections are, and you can tackle them in advance, then you'll find it's much easier to get to persuade the people around you to do the things that you think they should be doing. So yeah, think about your internal sales pitch and your target audience just as much as you do your external one, because like it or not, being one of the big jobs, certainly if you work in a big company, one of your jobs is to persuade lots of other people to do stuff which is the right idea.
Yeah, it's interesting that, because sales is, I think, sort of seen a bit of a sort of dirty profession in some ways. I'm sure there's people all over the industry who don't consider themselves salespeople. I'm sure there's rafts of creative people at agencies, that, oh, we're not salespeople. We would never do that. We're creatives or strategists or whatever. But in reality,
we're all selling, aren't we? We're always selling. Yeah.
Yeah. And I remember, I can't remember what book it is. This is maybe Imperfect Pitch. He talks about the president of the USA, probably the most powerful job in the world. And the way you get that is by pitching, is by selling you on multiple occasions over many, many years. So the ultimate job in the world is a sales gig, really, in some senses. But I've never heard that articulated by anyone on this show. But that's a really nice point. I'm definitely guilty of that. I'm like, oh, well, I'm just telling the guys on my team about this. I'll not bother making the slides look nice because it's only internal. But I think you're absolutely right. If you really want people to buy it and do it and get on board with it, you need to pull out the fireworks. This episode of the Shiny New Object podcast is brought to you in partnership with Madfest. Whether it's live in London or streamed online to the global marketing community, you can always expect a distinctive and daring blend of fast-paced content, startup innovation pitches, and unconventional entertainment from Madfest events. You'll find me causing trouble on stage, recording live versions of this podcast, and sharing a beer with the nicest and most influential people in marketing. Check it out at www.madfestlondon.com. So we are at the halfway stage now, roughly. So we're going to talk about your shiny new object, which has such a cool name, which is the six P's of transformation, which sounds like it should be written on a tablet of stone somewhere. But Jerry, what are the six P's of transformation?
They came up slightly jokingly because there are obviously four famous P's of marketing to do with how you actually do marketing. And I was just trying to think about I guess the nub of this was that, you know, I think digital transformation in particular, or just wider business marketing transformation, is something that we endlessly talk about, but sometimes we give more lip service to than actually doing. And in particular, I think, you know, digital transformation is something that we talk a lot about, and everyone loves to, you know, have big think pieces about how we do it. But it's rare you hear people talk about, like, practically how did they actually drive it. And, especially it's quite rare. The kind of role I do, a big global advertiser working across, my region, there's over 100 markets, hundreds or even thousands of marketers and things. How do you actually drive that change? So the kind of the shiny object was, not just talking about it, but actually doing it. And I was sort of trying to brainstorm to myself, because I joined GSK 2.5 years ago, feels much longer, COVID years, I suppose. In simplest terms, we were like spending less than 20% of our media in digital. We were really kind of behind where consumers were, behind where we need to be. Fast forward, and we're now over 40% across a really varied region, doing some really interesting test and learns, uses of data, e-commerce stuff. Yes, a lot has changed in the world around us, but fundamentally we've had to drive a massive change in the business. And what did we do it to drive it? And in actual answer to your question, when I was trying to put my thoughts together, I came up with people, partners, the processes, the passion or even the promotion of it, pilots and performance, which is quite a lot to get through, but we could probably whiz our way through some of those things. Yeah.
So people first.
People, it's the kind of thing you'd say in a cheesy interview answer, but absolutely, when you think about digital transformation, it's easy to think about technology. It's easy to think about, the big machinery and the Google tech stack and all this kind of digital transformation. But actually, digital transformation is really about the people. It's about dealing with the fact that, across my region, we have hundreds of marketers, and even in my own team, around a dozen media people, who many of whom have been doing their job for many years, who have got used to how companies do things, who, many of you have a fire to drive change, but sometimes in big companies you get that beaten out of you and you think, things aren't going to change. So that, and also for me, I found a huge importance in community. Like, I work in a regional job. A lot of my team don't ever see each other, except on a camera screen, of course. And people can be quite disconnected and isolated. And we have great things happening in Italy, great things happening in Germany, great things happening in Saudi Arabia, great things happening in Brazil. But how do you actually build a community of those people, get them talking to each other more, get them sharing more? And so that was really the thing I was most struck by, was that I had a team of around 10 people at the time. They barely, to be blunt, spoke to each other. They definitely didn't share that much. They were just kind of part of this loose organization. It's simple things like making them more connected, getting them talking to each other, but also empowering them. So everyone in my team, I ask not just to do their kind of day job, which is always looking after a specific market or area, but also to put their hands up to be involved in a more of a stretch project, which could be, helping develop our e-commerce thinking. It could be helping develop our data strategy. It could be helping develop our diversity and inclusion approach within media. And I think that forces everyone on my team to not just think about what they're doing, but to listen to what their colleagues are doing, to learn from them. And then also to bring their colleagues, the marketers around them, along for the journey. Because as with my marketing tip, it's no use shouting, do more digital or embrace these new opportunities at people. You actually have to understand what their barriers are, why they've been hesitant in the past, what capability they need, what support they need, what handholding they need. With the people at the heart of it, you don't get anywhere introducing new technology, introducing new processes, unless you engage with the people, persuade the people, and make them want to do something a bit different with you.
How about partners?
Well, partners is, I in my former job at Diageo, I led Global Media Partners, and I'm absolutely of the mind that you can do things much better and much faster with partners. And in my world, that can include the likes of Google and Facebook, and love them or hate them, they have great platforms, great technology, and absolutely we've focused a bit of our transformation on using those and getting those big opportunities right. But actually, when I think of partners, most of all, from a media perspective, I think of our agency. Like, I have, a dozen people in my team, but I have 300 plus people in my publicist team that covers that same area. I used to work at an agency for a bit, so I have a fairly positive view on agencies, and I really see them as an extension of our team. And we appointed publicists at more or less the same time I joined. We've done some quite bold things with how we work with them. Although all our media decisions and planning and thinking is done locally in the different markets across EMEA, we've reduced a digital hub. So there's a what we call a digital core team, a group of people headquartered in London, some fantastic people working for us in India to kind of give us extra capacity. We've got mini hubs in Poland, in the Middle East, where we've actually brought a lot of digital thinking, strategy and activation together. So rather than lots of different markets trying to work out, you know, what should I be doing? What are golden rules? What's best practice? What does innovation look like? We have teams who are seeing that happening live across different markets, trying to optimize, trying to improve on things. There are pros and cons of that. Obviously, people love having that local nuance, that local viewpoint. But I really think that we've built quite an interesting structure that makes the most of kind of the one publicist model, Digitas, some of the teams that they have, and ensures that we have this core team that is challenging us to do things differently. And when we find something that we can do differently, like we've been doing some work on supply path optimization, might sound a bit dull, but it's to do with, you know, measuring exactly where our digital media goes, which partners perform better, where we lose it in the programmatic chain. When we've found things that work, we've been able to scale those really, really rapidly, thanks to having a partner who's got a network set up to match ours.
So got to have the right people as well as the external partners, but how do you process? So do you have to invent new processes all of the times, or is it just kind of leaning back on models that you know work?
Yeah, I don't believe in over theorizing and over process, but without embarrassing my own company, I was a little surprised when I joined GSK a few years ago that we were quite very light on process in terms of, you know, standard models for how you might do briefing or how agencies might respond or how we should present our media and digital approaches. And although you can over-engineer those things, I think having some of those frameworks are really, really critical. And in fact, my career has been dotted with the fact of seeing the fact that frameworks can really help simplify and drive change. Like at Mondelez, when digital was a bit of a mess, we developed something called Storytelling at Scale, which was a really simple framework about how marketers could approach it. At Diageo, when brand safety and viewability and things were crashing down around the industry, we created something called the Trusted Marketplace, which was a really simple framework for driving that. And within GSK, if I can remember where I currently work, we've just introduced a range of things, some of which are quite simple, like forcing our teams and our agency to present our media plans not just as linear media plans, but visual kind of connections maps where you can see how your channels come together. We've introduced a new sufficiency process, which is really about bringing analytical rigor to our marketing process so that when we speak to finance, when we speak to our leaders, we can justify our media decisions, we can challenge them, we can show why we need to have more investment right down through that funnel, down into e-commerce media, down into to different channels. And I think, again, I've tried to sort of simplify, which, I mean, a lot of our marketers are dealing with an awful lot of things. So having some clear processes, some clear guidance, and some clear things that just plug in and they say, oh, okay, I understand. That's what I need. That's what I want to do. So, yeah, having a good, strong media product, media process. Don't over-engineer things. Don't make it your media approach or paint by numbers. But some of that rigor, which you can set regionally or globally, actually does help all the local teams come up with better end results than if you just leave everyone to kind of create their own way of doing things.
So next on your list is passion or promotion or promoting. So this sounds like the most vague of the lot so far. So yeah,
most important, which is that at the end of the day, I think one of the things that really moves organizations and it certainly moves people is having passion, is being caring about stuff. I don't know if I have to call it passion or promotion. Like, promotion is one of the original four P's. It's the bit where advertisers advertise and we talk to our consumers. And I guess, as I hinted with some of my our preamble, I actually think that, you know, if you're driving a transformation internally, you kind of have to advertise it as well. Like, you have to sell it into the people around you. You need to show that you're passionate about it. You need to tell them why it's a good idea. You need to show them what success looks like. And we've done that in some internal ways. Like, we have a monthly all hands call with several hundred people dialing in, where we celebrate best practice. I try and sound incredibly passionate and enthusiastic about projects, which I'm not always as passionate about. But also, like, externally, we've started to talk more externally as a business. We've started to try and make sure we enter, and indeed we've started to win a few more awards and things. And I think that matters because, you know, let's be honest, we work in marketing. Marketing is an industry that is in part motivated by promotion, by advertising, by what the trade press talks about. And I think it's important that you help your colleagues realize and see and understand and be recognized when they do great things. So when our markets do a great case study or do a great activation or drive something, we want to celebrate that. We want to share that passion and make it infectious, because nobody wants to do more digital and spend more digital and adopt more digital because they're told to, because there's a target they've been given, because, you know, someone in global is tracking their spend. They want to do it because it's the right thing to do, because it's exciting, because it's the future of marketing, because their consumers want it. So bring some of that passion in, and don't be afraid to do a bit of internal promotion, external promotion, because often your colleagues pay more attention to what's said about your business externally than internal. So make some noise and bring everyone along for the ride.
So next up is pilots. So tell me about that.
Testing and learning and piloting. And a lot of what we've driven in when you're trying to drive a change across, you know, 100 markets and, you know, literally hundreds of millions of pounds we've moved from more traditional channels into digital opportunities, you know, you have to do some big scalable things. We have to do, you know, big programmatic approaches and YouTube and Facebook partnerships. And we've really, really scaled some of those up. But it goes without saying, especially for that passion point I was just mentioning, that some of the most interesting stuff in digital is the new, is the untested waters. Now, you can't go all in on pilots and all in on things that have never been done before and, you know, new betas and things like that. But absolutely making sure a key part of your strategy is regionally, globally and locally testing new things, trying new things, not being ashamed to do so. We've done some great stuff with Tom, with your good friends at Automated Creative, like with one of our brands, Sensodyne, trying to find people who have sensitive teeth but actually don't really care enough to do anything about it. So they have relatively low data signals. They're not Googling this or researching it or talking about it. They're kind of just learned to live with a slightly mild problem in their life. And we've been using, you know, AI to have different creative executions to see how people respond to them, to try and hone in on how do we spot this audience from just the fact that they might vaguely pay attention to something if we shape it right for them. And then taking a pilot like that, and, you know, we've some work to do on that particular pilot, but, you know, when things work, how can we scale them? How can we move them? Our GB team's done some really interesting innovative partnerships with different media owners, including, you know, diverse LGBT media owners, to create new content, to find new ways of working. And I think, you know, the structure, the process, the big stuff is important, but you want to be doing the really fantastically interesting, innovative stuff. Even if it's just the icing on the cake now, one day some of that stuff becomes business as usual, and, you know, you can't afford not to be developing it.
And finally, performance. I know we debate this word a lot, but how does performance fit into these other P's for digital transformation?
Yeah, and I think, I mean, in the broadest sense, in terms of does it all work, not necessarily just like digital performance media, did we get someone to click and how much was their CPM? But there's no use making a song and a dance and celebrating, you know, how much we've shifted our spend, shifted our approach, shifted our strategies, if they don't deliver for our brands. You know, that's the whole point of marketing. It's nice to think about digital transformation and inclusion and things, but our job is to build brands and sell stuff. And that is the biggest long-term unlock in driving any transformation, is proving that the transformation you're driving is good for business. And that's true of the inclusion stuff. It's true of the digital transformation stuff. We're also trying to drive a really big change in our business where we talk less about just the science and facts of our product and more about the emotional, the reasons, the value they bring to consumers' lives, because we know that that kind of emotional advertising has more impact. And so, yeah, performance, there's a million different ways to measure stuff. My general mindset on that is that a lot of the easiest, most agile and most digital ways of measuring things don't tell you as much as you think or would like them to tell you. Like, you can work out very short-term performance and clicks and views and things, but that doesn't necessarily tell you what that's doing to your business. And some of the much more unwieldy and slower and almost old school ways of looking at stuff in our business that can be big MMM, econometric modeling. It's often brand tracking and surveys, or I think more increasingly you doing agile things like running different campaigns in different cities, seeing what happens, like seeing, you know, is this performing better in Birmingham than Manchester because we're using a slightly different mix of things. And I think we are building a strong view of what works. I'm always cautious because as soon as you go more into digital, people have a whole dashboards of numbers and they want you to optimize relentlessly to those. Oh, you know, we can get a cheaper CPM over here than there, but you have to ask some bigger questions like, is it worth paying more for that placement, for that audience, for those people? But at the end of the day, you have to find ways to measure. So whatever your business does, however it thinks, and that is important in marketing, but it's even more important, and I mentioned it a bit with some of the process stuff earlier, but it's even more important when you come out of marketing, when you try and talk to your finance team or your senior leadership, the people who ultimately control a bit of what you get to do. And we've massively gone on a journey on this at GSK. It was a huge thing at Diageo as well, with some of the systems they had internally there, which is that you need to arm yourself in marketing to talk about sales, to talk about long-term and short-term ROI. And then you're not just kind of asking for money or making stuff up. You're really coming with a business argument. So yeah, it ties a bow and everything you're doing together to show that it works, it makes a difference, and hey, we should do a bit more. All of which combined is how we've kind of driven this huge transformation across like the GSK consumer healthcare business. With different people doing different things, working in different ways. And our whole business is actually splitting out to be a separate company from our pharma business soon. I think we're quite ready for that now because of a lot of the change we've driven, but we are going into a new wave of that now with some exciting things ahead. So lots of change to come, but that's how we've driven, you know, a decade's change in the last two or so years.
So if you were going to do it all again, what would you do differently?
I'm exhausted, Tom. I wouldn't do it all over again. How would I do it all over? Without saying it's been flawless, a lot of it has gone really well. And that's not really down to me. It's down to a great team I have, a great agency we have, and that the great alignment we've had from senior management. For me, I'm always hungry for change and hungry to drive. If anything, it's not how would I do it again differently. It's, you know, what else do we need to change? Where else do we need to change? Who else needs to change? You know, I get hungry for that rather than looking back and saying, oh, it didn't work. But the key things are about bringing people along. The people is the heart of it. I think I arrived with bold ambitions. Some of what we were doing at Diageo, I think at the time was more advanced than what we're doing at GSK. I think much less so now. And I came with like this toolkit of like, right, I'm here, I can transform and change you guys, watch this space. And you realize, you know, it's not the people in the business don't know what to do differently or haven't suggested things. It's not that the local agency hasn't proposed more radical things. It's that there are barriers and people, and you've got to bring those along with you, drive capability. And I think I did do that, but there's more you could do in that space. And I think, you know, how you engage with people and really bring them along for that journey is the biggest part of any kind of transformation. I mean, I didn't really talk about the fact we've also introduced lots of new tech and back end stuff and, you know, made some big decisions about platforms and things. That's all critical. I guess it's kind of part of partners, but it gets hyped up to be the main thing when actually the people and the thinking and the strategy and how and why you're going to do this is so, so critical.
So we are at the end of the podcast. I'm very sad to say, how do you want people to get in touch with you if they are interested in finding out more about your 6 P's of digital transformation?
They can talk about anything else they like as well. I'm on LinkedIn, do add me or follow me there. And I'm pretty active on Twitter all hours of the day. So love getting stuck into a good discussion debate there at Jay Dakin, if you want to come find me.
Fantastic. Jerry, thank you so much.
Speak soon.
Hi, just before you go, I'd really appreciate it if you could take the time to write a review of the Shiny New Object podcast on Apple Podcasts or iTunes, whatever it's called these days. or whichever podcast provider you use. We're an indie podcast, so it would go a long way for us if you could just share the word and give us a bit of a support on those channels. That'd just be fantastic. If you haven't got time, that's also cool. And yeah, if you could tell your colleagues about the podcast, and also, if possible, don't forget to subscribe. And I'd love to hear your feedback. If you'd like to speak on the podcast or be a guest, or you think I'm asking the wrong questions, anything, I'd be super interested to hear what you think. So please email me at tom@automatedcreative.net. That's T-O-M at, I'm not going to bother spelling it. Anyway, you'll work it out. Thanks so much.